morning, all. The first case for argument this morning is the United States v. Lee. Mr. Shoemaker?
Good morning. Eddie Lee did not get a fair trial and was prejudiced by three different types of errors that kept out key evidence, the result of errors of the trial court and errors of his counsel. I'd like to focus my argument on why that's so, but before I do so, I'd like to briefly address a practical and a procedural issue in this case, and that is this. We are not unmindful of the fact that it is the preferred practice of this court to raise ineffective assistance of counsel issues not on a direct appeal, but on a Section 2255 motion. In this case, we raise these issues in this case for a very practical but nevertheless problematic reason. And the reason is this. Throughout the trial proceedings, Mr. Lee made record of his concerns about the ineffectiveness of his counsel. And following the trial, before sentencing, he actually filed a motion to set aside the verdict and for a new trial because of ineffectiveness of counsel. Those issues were addressed by the trial court in a brief decision that denied them and concluded that they weren't meritorious or they were harmless. And in that order, the trial court said if Mr. Lee disagreed with those, he could appeal from them. Our problem was that if we did not appeal for them, we believe we might run the risk that the government would contend that they were raised below and we waived them by not raising them on appeal. So for that reason, we raised them in our brief, and we recognize that that presents some difficulty because this record is not as complete on ineffectiveness of counsel as it would be if Mr. Lee had been represented by counsel in a Section 2255 motion. So that raises a practical concern for us and for the court, and I'd like to suggest some ways we might resolve that. One is we believe the record shows, notwithstanding that it wasn't as fully developed as we like, that it is sufficient to show that Mr. Lee was denied ineffective assistance of counsel and the court can reverse on that basis and order a new trial. Another alternative for the court would be to hear those issues, and if for some reason determined remand was appropriate, to remand for further proceedings to develop that record. Or if the court were to tell us now or otherwise that it preferred not to hear those issues and that we should raise them on a 2255, we're perfectly happy to do that. Whatever route we take, we're very pleased to make those arguments and to develop the record further if that's what the court believes. But that's the practical problem we had, and that's why we addressed them the way we did.
Well, you do realize, do you not, Mr. Mayor, if you proceed with it on appeal and seek a merits determination from the court, that will impact the capacity to raise it in the collateral proceeding.
Well, that is our concern, Your Honor.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And on that basis, unless the court prefers us to proceed in a different way, what I would do then is withdraw those ineffective assistance of counsel arguments for this proceeding and reserve the right to develop them later on a Section 2255 motion.
All right.
All right, we understand, and we are keeping track of these cases where there's been a direct criminal appeal, and you know we've never granted relief when it's done directly. So
I understand, and I hope the court understands our practical problem and why we brought that to the court's attention and did it as we did. So the three types of evidence that were precluded by the trial court's ruling were, one, rulings preventing Mr. Lee from calling witnesses who would have shown that he was not involved in a shooting that occurred minutes just before he was arrested and not involved in a shooting that occurred several hours before he was arrested. And that was very, very key evidence to Mr. Lee's defense because he was arrested in a vehicle, a gun was found near the vehicle afterwards, gunshot residue was found on the cuff of his sleeve, and what he wanted to do is to show that he got in this car just a few minutes before he was arrested. He had nothing to do with Corey Francis, the driver of the vehicle, but that vehicle of Ford Taurus and other occupants who did not match his description and were not wearing his types of clothing were involved in a shooting in just a few minutes earlier, and that was shown by bullets in the car, gunshot shell in the car, and the gunshot residue that came into contact with his clothing. That was very, very important to his defense because he wanted to show that a few minutes earlier he was doing innocent things and got in that car with someone who was involved in a shooting. Absent that evidence, and that evidence was very relevant, absent that, the jury had no reason to understand why he was in the car, had no reason to understand why there was guns in the car, why he was with Corey Francis, who had a gun, and so on. So that was highly relevant evidence.
Well, now let me understand, Mr. Schumacher. His offer of proof is from witnesses who would say he wasn't implicated. Is that right, in the shooting?
He was not present at the shooting.
Well, is that what the offer of proof it says? He wasn't present or wasn't implicated?
I believe the offer of proof, and without going into an effective assistance counsel issue, was that there were four victims of a shooting. Their names are in the record and were made a part of the record, and that they did not see Mr. Walton at the shooting. There were four black males in the vehicle. They were not wearing the same clothing Mr. Lee was wearing. He was wearing a jean jacket with a lot of sports logos on it. So it would have tended to show that he was not present at the shooting. Highly relevant, just as if I were stopped by a car on the way back to Madison today, and a gun fell out of a stocking cap in the car, and there was gunshot residue on my sleeve, and there was other evidence against me. The most important thing I would want to do, if I could, is show that that car was involved in a shooting at 9:15, and I wasn't present, and that I was, in fact, here in this court at 9:15, and that there's a very good explanation for how I happened to be in that car, and that I was not implicated, if you want to say it that way, or I was not seen.
Well, implicated is a lot different than not being in the car.
Well, but they're both relevant. They're both very relevant.
If he was his position that he was not in the car, is that what he wanted to bring testimony to?
He was not in the car. His testimony and the testimony of other witnesses would have been that he was at a barbecue until just a few minutes before he got in that car. And he wanted to ride to his girlfriend's house, and people said, well, you can ride with this guy, Corey Francis, if you give him a couple bucks. And he got in the car. At that time, the police immediately began to follow him. So the evidence that he wanted to show would have corroborated his own testimony, which, of course, was subject to impeachment, but his own testimony that he was at other places and that he was not seen at the shooting. And so that's highly relevant. And whether you say that the witnesses said that they didn't see him or they're certainly didn't there, they're both highly relevant. And what the testimony would have been from those witnesses is that they saw four people in the black Taurus. None of them looked like Mr. Lee, and the clothing didn't look like them. Highly relevant evidence, and that was precluded. That was the first type of error the trial court committed. And that was very, very prejudicial to this defense. The second error that the trial court committed that was prejudicial was excluding his gunshot residue expert based on not being qualified. And the testimony of the expert was that he was experienced in studying gunshot residue. He consulted with the Israeli crime lab on how much evidence you could see how you could tell whether a gunshot gun was fired or not. And that evidence would have rebutted other evidence that the trial court admitted, we believe erroneously, because of chain of custody issues. But what that evidence would have shown was that, in fact, it was more likely than not that that small amount of gunshot residue found on the cuff of his jacket after it was put into this dirty laundry bag came from a source other than firing a gun, such as touching the part of a vehicle in which a gun had been fired. That was highly relevant evidence, because without that, all his lawyer was able to do is suggest that that was possible, that it might have come from another source. But his expert's testimony would have shown that it was more likely than not that that evidence came from other than handling and firing a firearm. Highly relevant, because again, explained how gunshot residue came to be on the cuff of a sleeve of this man's jacket, and Corrad would corroborate his explanation of, hey, I just got in this car, it was involved in a shooting before me, and it doesn't show that I was handling or possessed a gun.
But there was a big problem with his expert, because his expert had no formal training or experience in analyzing fingerprints, and said he wasn't qualified to identify individuals through examination of latent prints. I mean, the expert never ultimately got to testify because he wasn't qualified. So
that was on the fingerprint issue, Your Honor. On the gunshot residue, the witness showed that he had, through practical experience, owned gun shops, studied crime scene reconstruction, been a consultant through practical experience in studying gunshot residue, and so I think the trial court erred
and you're right. I got confused on the experts because the court excluded both of them.
Yes.
And as to the gun expert, he was a former police officer who owned a business. And what he did was homicide scene reconstruction. He had an associate's degree in police science, and even though He had testified before as to gunshot residue. He didn't have training or experience in conducting the actual testing of an object for the presence of residue. So why was it an abuse of discretion for the court not to let that in? And if you didn't have that testimony, that's a problem.
We understand, and some of that goes to the ineffectiveness of counsel that I won't address, but I believe the court did abuse discretion in excluding both of those because I believe the evidence was sufficient to show he had practical experience and had actually consulted with the government of Israel on those issues. So while the testimony did not go into the details of his education, I think it showed the practical experience that he could show that when you fire a gun, you get more gunshot residue on your sleeve than a little bit on your cuff. So I think the court abuses discretion in applying a standard. Really what the court said is he didn't have evidence of his studying the physical properties of gunshot. I don't think that's what the issue was about. I think it was how gunshot residue forms a pattern.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Shoemaker. Mr. Pedersen?
Good morning, Your Honors. First, I'd like to address the district court's rulings as to the two prior shooting incidents. The district court did not abuse its discretion in preventing the defendant from presenting evidence regarding those two shootings. And when the district court considered the defendant's proffer, there was no proffer in the record that the individuals present at the shooting gave descriptions that did not match the description of Eddie Lee, which the defendant states in his reply brief. There's no support for that in the record. The police reports and statements of those witnesses were not included in the record. And although I would point out that based on the investigation, there was no evidence that any of the witnesses for either of the two shootings could see anyone inside the vehicles that were present. So there's no way that anyone could have given a description of the individuals inside those vehicles to say that they didn't match Eddie Lee.
Well, you objected to the evidence of the earlier shootings, but your evidence of the gunpowder on his jacket implies that he was involved somehow in the earlier shootings. Well, aren't you trying to have it both ways?
Well, the evidence also that the gunshot residue expert for the government testified to was that if you handle a gun, it can be transferred from the gun to a jacket. So that was the basis for our wanting to admit it. We were not trying to have it both ways. The defendant's own attorney, right up until the trial started, did not want this evidence to come in either because it could cut both ways. I mean, it's just as prejudicial that the defendant, that evidence would have been presented before the jury that there was a white Taurus involved in a shooting incident before the vehicle was stopped and the defendant was in a white Taurus minutes later. And I'd also point out that the district court never barred the defendant from presenting any witnesses to testify that he was somewhere else at just prior to the him being arrested. He gave his testimony of his version of events that evening, which included being at a party just prior to that and then just then meeting Corey Francis. And the district court never precluded him from bringing in those witnesses or having them testify that he was with them just minutes before and then got into the car with Corey Francis. So the defendant was not prejudiced in that respect by the district court's ruling. And the evidence that the defendant proffered also included during the second incident that there was a dark-colored car involved, so the witnesses that they would have brought in may have contradicted the fact that the Taurus was involved in the shooting. And in addition, in the defendant's reply brief, they state that the evidence would have shown that a gun was fired from within the vehicle. Again, there's no support for that in the record. The only reports that were given by the witnesses was that when the gunshots were fired, there was one individual that was seen standing on a sidewalk firing, but no witnesses reported that they saw any individuals firing a weapon from inside that vehicle. As to the defendant's expert, the defendant argues that he was prejudiced because he was not allowed to present evidence that it was more probable than not that the gunshot residue was transferred by secondary transfer, and that's what his expert would have testified to. But based on the testimony of the government's expert, who was qualified, he testified that there's no way to determine how gunshot residue is actually transferred to a particular item. He gave different possible explanations, but he couldn't conclude, and in his opinion, no one could conclude with any reasonable degree of scientific certainty that gunshot residue was transferred to an item from a specific source. So, Your Honors, for those reasons, it's our position that the district court did not abuse its discretion in making evidentiary rulings, and we'd ask that you affirm the defendant's conviction.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Mr. Shoemaker.
Your Honors, regarding the offer of proof with the witnesses that Mr. Lee were excluded, I believe it's on page 448 and 449 of the transcript of 1116. I believe it was that those four individuals would have testified they were present when the shootings occurred, that Mr. Lee was not present, that they do not recognize Mr. Lee, and those involved in the shooting were wearing different clothes and things like that. I think the record stands for itself, but I believe that's what it summarizes. The government has argued that there was nevertheless overwhelming evidence against Mr. Lee. Well, that's just not the case. The evidence comes down to the fingerprint evidence and the gunshot residue evidence. At closing argument and its brief, the government said, if we're relying only on the fingerprint evidence and the gunshot residue evidence, I might as well sit down because that evidence would be insufficient to convict Mr. Lee. That's not overwhelming evidence. As the government says in its brief, it's marginal evidence. The other evidence the government relies on is the testimony of Nishita Foat, Mr. Lee's girlfriend, who was standing outside of her house here and says that she came out and she saw Mr. Lee lying on the ground when the lady, meaning Officer Sundley, were there. Well, that's just not true because the testimony of the police officers, Officer Sundley, came after Mr. Lee was put in the way in this paddy wagon vehicle. So Nikita Coates' testimony is hardly overwhelming since it conflicts with the government's own testimony. And she was standing here. The gun and do-rag were found here. So that leaves the testimony of this do-rag and the gun found sometime after Mr. Lee was put into the vehicle. That testimony is hardly overwhelming. Hardly overwhelming. What the testimony was that the police officer said that when Mr. Lee had the gun pointed at him, he had the gun, the do-rag, balled up in his hands with the strings hanging down. He says, I know there was not a gun in there because I would have recognized it. He says, Mr. Lee then just laid down face first with his hands in front of him, like you were doing a push-up or something like that. He says the area was fairly well lit. He says that if Lee had tucked the gun, the do-rag under him, he would have considered a furtive moment, an effort to conceal, and he did not believe, the police officer arrested him, had a gun pointed at him standing over, said he did not believe Lee was hiding his hands underneath him. He said he made a typical movement as if someone were to lay on the ground. He said he did not mention any tucking of his hands underneath him in the police report. He said he saw no do-rag and he saw no gun when he knelt down to handcuff Mr. Lee, and when he picked him up and looked at the ground where Mr. Lee's belly had been. He saw no do-rag and he saw no gun. That was the arresting officer's testimony. This was a high crime area. Two police officers came and stood behind that Taurus. They saw no do-rag, they saw no gun. The government's case seems to be an argument that Mr. Lee somehow had this do-rag in his hand, somehow magically laid on the ground, magically caused the do-rag to disappear, and magically caused the gun to disappear, only to appear later after two police officers had walked past that area right behind the car and didn't see it. That's the overwhelming evidence that the government contends makes all these errors by the trial court non-prejudicial. That's why a new trial in this case is necessary. Because if Mr. Lee could bring in testimony to show that that gunshot residue more likely than not came from a source other than touching a gun, as in being a contact in a vehicle that had been involved in a shooting, and if Mr. Lee could be bringing testimony to show that those fingerprint evidence had absolutely no merit and that he was present in the shooting, he would have been acquitted and he would have proven his innocence, and that's why a new trial is required in this case.
Thank you. Our thanks to all counsel. Mr. Shoemaker, you have an additional thanks to the court for accepting this appointment and aggressively defending the interests of Mr. Lee.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think the government and I have a question. The court has ordered that we may file the originals of these exhibits with the court, and we don't know if the court's potential to file them with the clerk today or in the district court.
Anytime you want.
Yeah, well, these were admitted below. Is that right, Mr. Patterson? All right. Well, so it's a joint motion to file it with
this court? At least.
All right. It may be filed with the clerk of this court.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Case is taken under advisement.